Hi, and welcome back to Give Us Morg. I'm Neve, and normally I would be joined by Megan, but Megan's off living a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity in Malta. But don't worry, guys, she's still here in the background doing things. You just might not see her. Well, you never see us. You might not hear her as often. But not to worry. We're still here. We're better than ever. So, I hope you missed us all. Missed you. I love the way I'm saying that, like, what, fourth episode in? Like, I hope you missed us. I'm getting lonely, guys. Can't wait to see all of your reactions when we are 100% back in action. Because, you know what, we missed you guys. So, there, I said it. So today I'm going to tell you about the story of Angela Hammond. Angela Marie Hammond was born February 9th, 1971 in Kansas City, Missouri, to Marcia and Chris Hammond. In 1975, Angela's parents decided to move to Clinton, Missouri to be closer to Marcia's parents. Soon after they moved in, Angela became a big sister as her parents had a baby boy. Angela's parents then divorced shortly after this. Her dad, Chris, moved to Kansas, and her mom, Marcia, moved her and her brother to Montrose, Missouri, which was only about a 20-minute drive from Clinton. So she's still very local and still very close to Clinton, and she spends most of her childhood, well, not childhood, like her teenage years, hanging out in Clinton with her friends. Angela seemed to have a good childhood. She was described as smart, witty, and driven. She was a very likable person in school and outside of school, and everyone who knew her said that she was destined to have a bright future. Angela graduated from Montrose High School, and soon after this, she started dating 18-year-old Rob Schaefer. And Angela was 19 at the time. So she had just graduated from high school and he was the year below her. So he was coming into his senior year. Rob was a football star his senior year in high school. And he wanted to join the military after he graduated. Angela was taking classes at Central Missouri State University. And she was also working evenings at a local bank as a processor. Then in January 1991, the couple found out that Angela was pregnant with their first child. Rob proposed to Angela soon after, and Angela was just more than happy to say yes to him. They were so madly, deeply in love. Their baby was due in September 1991. Rob did indeed join the military, like he put his name down for basic training, and he was due to start basic training. I think it was like in the August or something like that, he was due to start basic training, something along those lines. I can't remember the exact date. Then on April 4th, 1991, Rob and Angela went to Marcia's house for a family barbecue. At around 9 p.m, Angela, Rob, and their friend Kyla left the barbecue to bring Rob to his parents' house because he had to babysit his younger brother. After dropping Rob off at about 10 p.m, Angela and Kyla drove around Clinton for a little while, and this wasn't unusual for them. They did this all the time. I mean, I live in a small town and it's very common for 17 and 18 year olds that have their license to just kind of drive around. I think it's out of boredom, really. Sometimes they sit outside our local church in the car to like chat and stuff. It's weird, but it's not weird at the same time. So Angela was supposed to go over to Rob at 11:30 p.m. because that's when his parents would be home. And at about 11:15 p.m. she dropped Kyla home and she told her that she was just going to go home to her mother's house. She wasn't going to go over to Rob because she was just too tired and she wanted to go home and lie down and rest and go to bed instead. Which, I mean, the girl is like, what, 4 months pregnant at this stage? Completely understandable wanting to go home and sleep. When I was pregnant with Anna, I slept all the time, literally. Like, I'd have like 3 naps a day. It was great. I miss it. I don't really. Well, I do, but you know, having Anna is way more fun. Angela drove to a payphone in a local parking lot to phone Rob and tell him her plans of heading home instead of going over to him. Now, from what I could find, I was somewhat confused about this because apparently Rob and Angela had bought an apartment or were renting an apartment, but for some reason she was going to drive the 20 minutes to her parents' house and stay with them. But the phone booth that she drove to was about a 10-minute drive from Rob's house. So people were very confused as to why she didn't just drive over to Rob. Like, she could have drove over to him and been like, oh, just driving by to say, I'm going to go home. Or she could have just drove the 20 minutes home and could have rang from her parents' house to be like, I'm too tired to phone. Angela called Rob at about 11:25 p.m. Now, Rob was super understanding on the phone. He understood that Angela was 4 months pregnant and he didn't have any issues with her not wanting to come over. Then at about 11:45 p.m, whilst still on the phone to Rob, Angela noticed a green Ford pickup truck circling the car park. She told Rob about it and how she was starting to feel a little uneasy with the way that this truck was circling. The pickup truck then parked beside Angela in the phone booth, so she began describing the driver and the truck to Rob. She described the driver as a filthy looking man with a grey beard and mustache who was wearing overalls. The man tried to use the payphone next to Angela, but she could hear him hang up the receiver soon after he walked into the phone booth. So Angela asked him if he needed the payphone, and he told her no, that he'd try again in a little bit, not to worry. So the man got back into his truck. The truck had, she described, as like painting of a fish jumping out of a lake on the back window of the truck. And when the man got back into his truck, he took out a flashlight and he began to look for something in his truck. And Angela, still on the phone to Rob, is like, this is so weird, so random. Then, moments later, Rob heard Angela scream and the phone started banging against the phone booth. And this is what he could hear. Rob said he also heard the man say, quote, I didn't need the phone anyway. How creepy. How creepy is that? Rob got in his car immediately and started driving towards the phone booth Angela told him she was at. As he was driving, he passed a green Ford pickup truck and he noticed a woman in the passenger seat who seemed to be struggling. He said he also could hear someone scream, Robbie, and he said, quote, that's how I knew it was them, end quote. Robbie then threw his car into reverse and did a quick U-turn. He started following the truck and he managed to do so for about 2 miles before the transmission in his car gave out, and that can happen from throwing your car into reverse too fast. So unfortunately, all Rob could do was to watch as the truck sped off into the distance. Around midnight, Rob managed to flag down a car and he asked them to drop him off at the police station. Rob got to the police station. He told the police that a greenish, yellowish Ford pickup truck with maybe a white cab that also had some damage to the front fender of the driver's side was the truck that they were looking for. Rob also told them that on the back window there was a fishing scene painted on it, and he was also able to give a description of the driver as a man with a beard and mustache who was wearing overalls. The police chief then had to call Marcia, Angela's mother, and inform her that her daughter had been kidnapped. He then asked Marcia would she pass the message along to Chris, Angela's father, and she did so. Now, the police told them to wait until the morning to come down to the police station. Like, they said that they were going to go out and they were going to look for Angela, but to just sit at home and wait until the morning. But Chris obviously, naturally, went into dad mode and he drove to Clinton immediately and was at the police station within 2 hours, which I think checks out because where he lived, I think, was roughly like an hour and a bit away. And so then by the time he got into Clinton and to the police station, it was about 2 hours later. Marcia, Chris and Rob drove around Clinton looking for Angela while police went to check out the phone booth. They found Angela's car with her purse still inside, and they also found Rob's car where he said it would be, and it was indeed broken down. As the police began investigating the disappearance of Angela, they began to suspect Rob. They found his story was just a little hard to believe, and the phone booth that Angela was using was only 7 miles from Rob, so why didn't she just go over or wait until she got back to her mother's house to call him? They also questioned why Angela stayed on the phone for so long, if she was as tired as she told Rob and Kyla. The police find it odd that Rob was able to give such amazing details about the truck and the driver, but he never once took note of the truck's license plate numbers. Rob was interviewed by police several times, and he even took a voice stress test and a polygraph test, which he passed both with flying colours. Rob was then eventually cleared when the woman who brought him to the police station the night Angela went missing came forward and said that she too saw a green Ford pickup truck. Marcia and Kyla never once questioned Rob. They always knew that he was not at all to blame for what had happened and said that he loved Angela so much. Marcia told reporters, quote, "Nobody blames him, but I think he thinks people blame him," end quote. Then two witnesses came forward and said that the night Angela went missing, they saw her in the phone booth at a green Ford with a fishing mural on the back window. They were able to describe the driver as a man in a baseball cap and a mustache. When a few more people started coming forward, they said that they saw the green Ford pickup truck, but it was a younger man who seemed to be driving it. This man seemed to be more in his late 20s to early 30s, with no beard and long hair. The local police called in the help of the Missouri State Police and the FBI because they had never dealt with a case like this before and they wanted all possible help. The state police cross-referenced the common description of the truck with DMV records, but that came up with over 1,500 possible vehicles. They began to cross-reference the cars with their list with those in the area, but that didn't really lead to any breakthroughs in the case. The bank that Angela worked for started to offer an award for $5,000 for any information that would lead to finding Angela. Then Angela's family and friends got together and they collected an additional $11,000, making the reward a total of $16,000 for any information that would lead to Angela and what had happened to her that night. Before I go any further, we're just going to take a quick ad break. Then on April 8th, 1991, 4 days after her disappearance, over 200 local people got together along with the police to search all of the woods and farmland in Clinton. Rob spoke to the press saying, quote, "I just want to find her. I haven't lost hope," end quote. Which, I mean, it's 4 days later. I think it's good that you haven't lost hope. I think I would have suspected him if he had given up hope after 4 days. Not gonna lie. But he didn't, so it's all good. Sadly, they never found Angela or any clues as to where she might have been, and they never found the truck or any of the possible drivers. Over the following 6 months, the police had up to 500 leads on Angela's case. However, none of them were credible, and none of them ever led to any persons of interest. Rob went off to military for his basic training, as planned, not knowing where his wife was or what had happened to her and their unborn child, which has got to be tough. 6 months into the investigation, Marcia told reporters that the family needed to start moving forward, that they were always going to look for Angela and they were never going to stop looking for her, but they needed to start the grieving process and they needed to just move forward with their lives. And that has to be very difficult because obviously, you know, their daughter has been taken and Rob's fiance has been taken. And, you know, you want to know what happened to her and you want to know where she is, but you also can't just stop your whole life. And everybody grieves in different ways and everybody deals with situations differently. So, you know, she wanted to start moving on with her life again. So it's around that this time police began to suspect that Angela was most likely dead. Police then began to theorise that Angela's disappearance had something to do with the disappearance of two other women, Trudy Darby and Cheryl Ann Kenny. Trudy Jean Bletcher Darby was a 42-year-old store clerk who worked at a convenience store in Max Creek, Missouri. At 10 p.m. January 19th, 1991, Trudy called her son from work and told him about two men that were lurking outside the store. She said she was feeling very spooked and uneasy about having to close up and get into her car with the two men outside. Her son lived nearby and told her to stay inside the shop and he was on his way and he was going to help her get home safely, even if it was to just walk her to her car. When her son got there, Trudy, however, was gone, but her coat and purse were still behind the counter of the store and her car was still in the parking lot. The store had been robbed and about $200 was missing from the till. 2 days later, shell casings along with some blood and hair were found near a local river. And then later that same day, the body of Trudy was found along the riverbank. Trudy had been shot twice in the head and she had been raped. The two men that Trudy told her son about were the main suspects and the main priority was to find them. Sadly, her case went cold not long after with no real leads. Cheryl Ann Kenny was a 30-year-old married mother of two. She worked as a store clerk in a convenience store in Nevada, Missouri. On February 27, 1991, Cheryl was working the late shift. The shop normally closed at midnight, but because it was a quiet night, she decided to close the shop up at about 10 p.m. Cheryl closed the store and she had set the alarm at 10:17 p.m. as that's when the alarm was timestamped. However, she never made it home. Her car was still in the parking lot of the store, suggesting she never even made it to her car. Two people claimed that they heard screaming coming from the parking lot roughly around the time that Cheryl went missing. There was never any leads in Cheryl's case, and that too went cold. There was no evidence to link the disappearance of Cheryl to Angela or the death of Trudy with the other disappearances, except for the fact that they were months apart and the women were taken in a similar manner. Marks Creek and Nevada were only an hour away from Clinton and an hour away from each other, so it made kind of like a triangle. So if you ever watch Criminal Minds, that they go. That makes a little triangle. Suspish. In December 1991, the police got a tip that a woman matching Angela's description was spotted at a drugstore in Canada. The woman was then seen getting into a green pickup truck. Police investigated the tip, but nothing really came of it, and this seemed to happen quite a lot. Many people claimed to have seen Angela in Canada and Mexico and in different states, but a lot of the times it was a case of mistaken identity. Then, a police informant came forward and said that on the day of Angela's disappearance, he had received a letter. The letter was postmarked with the date, April 4th, 1991, and it said, quote, "Hello," and then the name's redacted, so it's a blank. "We know who you are. People like you deserve what you get. We know where your foxy daughter is at. She will see us soon." The informant had a daughter who was roughly the same age as Angela, apparently looked very similar, and her name was also Angela. Some people believe that Angela Hammond was taken by accident and she was just in the wrong place at the wrong time and was just the wrong Angela. The target was most likely this informant's daughter, as he was due to give evidence in some major trial. Obviously, because his name is redacted, I can't find out what trial or who possibly would have taken her. For obvious reasons, like, you know, they don't just give police informants names out and willy-nilly. Although, wouldn't it be super handy if they did for, you know, murderers and stuff. Then, in 1992, the show Unsolved Mysteries, we stan, they aired an episode that included Angela's disappearance. This resulted in the police receiving over 700 calls that had leads onto what happened to Angela. People claiming they knew where she was, they saw her here, they saw her there, they saw this woman everywhere. None of these phone calls resulted in any credible tips or suspects. Then, in 1993, a psychic told police that the green pickup truck they were searching for would be found on a farm in Lafayette County. Over 20 police officers and about 5 cadaver dogs went to this farm and searched the property. But alas, they never found the truck and they didn't find any human remains on the property. In 1995, Jesse Rush and Marvin Chaney were arrested for the murder of Trudy Darby. They were Trudy's half-brothers. Jesse had reportedly told a friend that he and his brother had raped and killed Trudy. The friend then went to police and agreed to cooperate, and he managed to get Jesse on tape admitting that he and Marvin were responsible for killing their sister. How sick do you have to be to rape and kill your half-sister? Like, what? The police thought that the two men could have been responsible for the disappearance of Angela and Cheryl, and possibly even others. However, they had no evidence to link them to these crimes. Marvin Chaney sadly died in prison before police were able to link him to any of the crimes that he was suspected of committing. So that's like very sad for police, not very sad for him. He was apparently a very bad man. I think his wife covered for him at first and said, like, no, he didn't kill Trudy, he was with me. But then the police were able to, like, basically give her information, like, well, he did commit these crimes. And so then she eventually was like, yeah, okay, I lied for him. But he made me lie. Like, she was scared of him. And that's why she covered for him. I think he was like, you know, your typical a-hole who was abusing her and different things like that. So another theory is that Angela was the victim of a serial killer, Kenneth McDuff, as he was active in Missouri at the time. Kenneth was responsible for the murder of several young women, and the disappearance of Angela does match some of his other crimes. However, there is no evidence to connect him. Angela has been missing for 30 years, and there is still no leads as to what happened to her the night of April 4th, 1991. Rob still keeps in touch with her family, but he moved on. He got married and he started his very own family, but he still thinks about Angela and their unborn child together. He still holds out hope that Angela will be found and that her killer will be brought to justice. If you have any information that will help solve this case, please contact the Clinton Police Department. I think that it's very sad that this young woman, she was only like 20 at the time. It's very sad. She's gone missing. And 30 years later, we still don't know where she is. And it's also very spooky that whilst she's just on a payphone, that a creepy man pulls up beside her and takes her. And voila, that's it, she's gone, never seen again. I really hope you liked this week's episode. If you did, make sure to check out some of our other stuff. Last week I talked about the toolbox killers, so that was super not fun, but anyhow. So if you would love to check out our Instagram and our Twitter at giveusmorg for updates on new episodes and other silly stuff, that would also be amazing. You can also follow our own personal Instagrams if you want to see who you're following, at megpowell_ and at mrs_neve. It's been real. If you would love to subscribe to us on whatever device you're listening to this on, that would be unbelievably amazing of you. And if you'd like to leave us a review, you can also do so, and we would also super love that. And if you screenshot your review and send it to us in a DM on Instagram at giveusmorg, we will give you a shout out on the next episode. This episode is pre-recorded, so it might actually be the very next episode, but your name will be in an episode where we go, hey, we love you, thank you for giving us a review. And that's how that goes. Okay, guys, hope you enjoyed this week's episode. So excited for spooky season, guys. So excited. Pumpkins everywhere. Carl's gonna hate it. Okay. And before I go, on our most recent post, why don't you tell us what you were thinking of dressing up as for Halloween? Because I would love some suggestions. I have no idea what to do this year. Normally, I just dress up as a witch. So then on Halloween, I like to dress up as something different, you know? Change it up from my everyday witchy woos.
Okay. Bye, guys.
Bye.